Okay, I bring to order the House Committee on Education for the, what is this, 7th of February, 2018. Okay, what we're going to be doing, and if you didn't hear me, if you need to sign up to testify, we've got the papers over on the side. And so today, what we're going to do is we're going to go in the order, we're going to go through and do 4102, and then 4144, and then we'll talk about, and then we'll end up with 4013. So, I'd like to gavel in for a public hearing on House Bill 4102. Representative Teresa Alonso Leon, please.
Thank you, Rep. Doherty. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Alonso Leon, and I represent House District 22, which includes Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and North Salem. Some of you may know that prior to being an elected legislator, I served as a high school equivalency and GED administrator for the state of Oregon. In that role, I took my lifelong passion for education to a new level in serving students and educators across the state. In that position, I restructured our high school equivalency and GED program to better support our educators, adult students, and students who had to leave a more traditional path because it didn't work for them. In my 20-plus years of working in education and in many capacities, I have learned that our student success depends on school and family support and having them feel connected, supported, and encouraged at school. But we know that many of our students do fall through the cracks. So, when I hear that nearly 25% of our students don't receive their high school diploma, like many of you, it greatly concerns me. And I wonder why so many of our students drop out and then wonder, what are we doing to re-engage them? What are we doing to bring them back? It is imperative that we improve our graduation rate in Oregon, but it is also crucial that the students who don't fit in our traditional role get another opportunity to get the education they deserve. This means encouraging them to get their high school equivalency, like the GED, and go on to post-secondary opportunities. That is why I felt that this bill was important. In order to best re-engage students, it is important to have the data we need to take those next steps. House Bill 4102 seeks to support the work of my fellow legislators by directing the Department of Education to work in partnership with the HEC and the Chief Ed Office to conduct a study to collect information on the following. Methods to better track school dropouts. We want to know why they drop out and what happens to them after they drop out. I believe this process will be greatly supported by the hard work that has been happening to build our state's longitudinal data system. Ways to improve outreach or incentives to Oregonians that have not completed a high school diploma or high school equivalency. Methods to track the re-engagement of non-diploma holders. We want to know why they re-engaged and why and whether they are earning their GED or high school diploma. We want to explore ways to improve the collection and analysis of data regarding GED students and GED preparation programs. We want to know what career or post-secondary opportunities our GED graduates are preparing for. And we want to know how they are faring in college compared to our high school students. I am aware that there are other legislators in the House and in the Senate that have been working on this issue, and I look forward to joining them in providing much needed data through this bill and an additional perspective regarding my work as Oregon's former high school equivalency and GED administrator, who proudly served a population of students whose voices needed to be represented and elevated. I respectfully urge an aye vote on this issue.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you very much. And as the other person that signed up was Tim Cowan, as he's coming up, I will have Alethea read what the bill is because I forgot to have her do that. So, thank you.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 4044 requires the Chief Education Office to conduct a study on the House Bill 4102 requires the Oregon Department of Education to conduct a study on students who drop out of public secondary schools in the state. A revenue impact statement has been issued. There's no revenue impact. There is a fiscal impact which has been issued, and you have that. And this bill has a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Cowan.
Chair, committee members, I'll be brief. I'm a member of the South Lake Church up in West Lynn. We entered into an agreement with the St. John's community, Portland School District, and Roosevelt High School. First day, we had 1,500 volunteers. We landscaped, we painted, we pulled any kind of maintenance or anything that we could do on things. Neil Lomax is a member. He coached the football team. We have a gentleman who's with Nike. He's a designer. After we showed that we were going to stay there for over 6 years, we weren't just going to come and run, they put in one of the best sports facilities in Portland. We had, as a result of our involvement in just about everything, the greatest improvement in the graduation rates in the state of Oregon, with no public money. Now, about 2 or 3 years ago, we went into Detroit. What we did is made a template of how you get different parts of the community together and work together with the schools. And it's being very successful in Detroit, Michigan. So what I would like you to do, in being brief, I would like the study that's done to include what South Lake Church has done and take a look at their template, because we did have the greatest improvement in graduation rates.
Sorry.
And we did it with no public money, and we did it just like it was just testified. It was a community involved in the school. And one thing that happened is the teachers' morale went way up when the community was supporting the teachers. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Mr. Cowan? Okay, thank you very much. Those were the only two that we had signed up. Is there anybody else that would like to speak on House Bill 4102? Okay, if not, we're closing the public hearing on House Bill 4102, and we're temporarily opening up House Bill 4013 to allow Senator Frederick to speak. Then we'll close, go to another topic, and come back. So with that, I temporarily open up a public hearing on House Bill 4013. And do you want to read it before Representatives?
Yeah.
Frederick speaks on it.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 4013 removes the designee from attending the State Board of Education meetings on behalf of the State Treasurer and Secretary of State. It allows the deputy for the State Treasurer and Secretary of State to attend State Board of Education meetings on behalf of the State Treasurer and Secretary of State, and the deputy position is defined in statute. Revenue impact statement has been issued as no revenue. There is a fiscal impact, which has a minimal fiscal impact, and there are no subsequent referrals.
Okay, thank you. Senator Frederick.
Hello there. Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. Good to see you folks. Get a chance to see you now. I just wanted to give a little perspective. I was on the State Board of Education starting.
Did you introduce yourself?
I did not. My name is Senator Frederick. I'm a state senator from District 22, North and Northeast Portland. I was on the state board for from 2007 to 2009, and I frankly enjoyed my time there. But it was a matter of coming up, often dealing with a lot of different controversial issues that were not generally known by the rest of the state. That included things like a real concern about the knowledge of finances by and civics by folks and by the students in the state. One of the approaches that was made was to say, okay, let's try to make sure that we have that kind of information presented. And we spent some detailed time working on just that. And part of the effort by, I believe it was Senator Metzger, who was involved with that, was to try to make sure that we had someone from the Secretary of State's office and the Treasurer involved in that discussion. It was an expectation that that would be someone from their offices, that they would be there because they brought some expertise specifically from those offices to that. That's how we approached it during the session. There are a number of other other folks who were on the board at that time. I don't think there's anybody on the board presently who was there, because that was 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago. But that was how we approached it. That's why we decided to try to get that change, so that we would have somebody from those offices specifically from those offices, helping to decide what was going to be happening and monitoring how well we presented those particular issues. That's how it was presented. I wanted to make sure that you understood why it began and where we were trying to go with those ideas. That's about it. I enjoyed my time on the state board, and I'm glad to be here now too.
Any questions for Senator Frederick, Representative
yes.
Parrish?
Thank you. So, when you were on the state board, was that in your capacity as a lawmaker?
No, that was actually before I became a lawmaker. I was on the state board. Governor Kulongoski called me at a very strange time and said, "I'd like for you to be on the board." I was actually in the hospital bed when he called me, so that's why I said it was a strange time. And I said, "You know, you've got the advantage of me. I'm pretty well doped up on things right now."
Commit to anything.
And then when I was appointed to the state to the legislature, I resigned from my seat on the board.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
So at that time, though, the governor had, as a duly elected officer of the state, had the ability and the authority to appoint somebody who was not his staff, not his deputy, to that. He appointed you individually. What was the level of expertise that you brought, and what was his consideration set for you at that time?
Well, as I said, I was a board member, but let's see. Let's go through the list. I was a teacher for 2 years in the Portland Public Schools. I had worked at that time as a reporter covering education for many years. I had been for 12 years the director of public information for the Portland Schools. I had worked for Portland Community College president, Cascade Campus, as his assistant for about a year. And I had been involved, and I was a student, and still officially a student, as a PhD candidate at PSU in urban studies, speech and communications, but also working with education issues. So I had a pretty reasonable background in education at the time when I, as one of the board members appointed to the state board, that's when he decided to appoint me.
One last follow-up. Mm-hmm. And that position, if I recall, was a voting position. You actually got to vote on the
yes.
board. The two positions that are under discussion right now are actually ex officio, and they don't have a vote. They are there to be a liaison rather than people who are voting on actual policy of the board.
Well, Representative Parrish, members of the committee, the approach that was taken at the time of the board meeting was that these folks would bring expertise from those state offices to the board, that they would have the ability to help not only give ideas but also help push those ideas through as an ex officio member, but with the gravitas of those state offices. So that was the approach that was taken when we were discussing that
yeah.
change. That's what we were looking at.
Okay, thank you. So you were appointed and then confirmed by the Senate.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, any other questions of Representative Frederick? Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
You very
I know
much.
You have another meeting to go to, so I will close the public hearing on 40-13 and open up a public hearing on 40-44. Representative Helfrich, and I'll remember to go through and have you read what the bill is.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 4044 requires the Chief Education Office to conduct a study on the recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development of educators who serve students in preschool through grade 12 from at-risk student groups, and the bill defines student groups that are at risk. The revenue impact statement is no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal impact statement which has a minimal impact, and the bill has a subsequent referral from Joint Ways and Means after talking to LFO because it has a minimal impact statement. That referral can be rescinded with this version of the bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Helfrich.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Hernandez, and Vice Chair Wilson. Thank you for your time, and members of the committee. For the record, I am Jeff Helfrich, representative from House District 52. I'm the chief co-sponsor of Bill 4044, and Senator Chuck Thompson, of the Senate District 26, is the chief co-sponsor, and he's unable to attend today as he is in a committee meeting. Thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 4044, a bill to study the recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development of educators who serve students in public preschool through grade 12 who may be at risk for experience and achievement gaps. As I said in the presentation at the Legislative Concept during Legislative Days, children are our greatest natural resource. Having the opportunity to support, having quality supported educators for our children is critical to the development and fostering of the success of the natural, of our natural resource. This bill is the result of myself, my chief of staff, Dr. Brandi Etheridge, who holds a PhD in education, having discussions with educators and high-level administrators in Hood River, Multnomah County Education Service District, Clackamas County Education Service District. As you will hear in testimony today, House Bill 4044 will build upon Senate Bill 755, and the resulting Educator Equity Report addressed the recommendations of the Governor's Council on Educator Advancement, Oregon's Every Student Succeeds Act, ESSA, plan, and the newly launched 2018 Teaching, Empowering, Leading, and Learning, or Tell Oregon Survey, which opened on February 1st and closes on February 28th. As I stated, House Bill 4044 will study the recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development of educators who serve students in public preschools through grade 12 who may be at risk for experiencing an achievement gap when compared to other groups. This bill has a four-fold phase purpose: identifying, research, and review and assessment programs used in school districts and education service districts, education service districts that support educators. So to unpack this, HB 4044 will identify the programs assessed and functioning sources of these programs that have been most effective or efficient in improving recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development of educators, or have been the most effective or efficient in positively impacting students' outcomes for students identified in schools or districts that have students. Secondly, identify schools or districts that have implemented programs identified, and each of these identifying factors are reasons for the program's efficient or effectiveness, or were able to positively impact students' outcomes, population of educators or students served by the program, and challenges and the opportunities for success and improvements outcomes of educators and the students. We've been told this has minimal or no fiscal impact. We've been asked to hear testimony today. Will speak to the importance of this potential positive impact of this bill on our educators and our children of our state.
Very much. Are there any questions of the representative?
Was this a no, or was this a question?
No, I was saying hi.
Okay.
The good.
Oh, saying hi.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yes.
Good to see you.
Representative Hernandez.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. I'm just curious, like, what made you passionate about this?
So I have little kids. I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. So they are important. Those are our greatest assets, our greatest natural resource. And so I have a passion about the outcomes of education. With that, some of my first meetings after my appointment were with educators, and you were at the table at one of them from East Multnomah County, and that was one of the things we heard was retention and ongoing mentoring. And that was where this gained traction in our discussions about the two bills that I could draw.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative McLean.
I was going to do this offline, but I think this is something that you probably have an answer to now, so I'll go ahead. And if you don't, we can do it offline.
Okay.
But, you know, this, you were indicating that this is basically going to help carry out the council on advancement of teachers sort of goals along with the other documents that you listed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you have if you figured out how to make that part of the works. Is that why it doesn't have a fiscal? Is because you would do it through some of the vehicles that they have at their disposal to work on teacher advancement and also the development?
Yes, Dr. Rosselli will speak to that as okay. part of this, but that's where that came from.
Okay. Right,
thank you.
Okay, thank you. The other people we have signed up, we've got Ian Raleigh, Stacy Mickelson, Hilda Rosali. And if you three want to come up and we'll hear your testimony. Thank you. And make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Ewan Brawley, and I'm the Director of Teaching and Learning at the Clackamas ESD. I've worked in public education for 24 years as an educational assistant, teacher, assistant principal, and in various central office roles. I'd like to start by sharing a quick story from a past role as a school administrator about why it's so important to have research-based strategies to retain our best teachers. We all think of teachers as the caring, dedicated professionals who commonly go above and beyond to show every child that they matter. One of the teachers I worked with, I'll call her Charlene, was an exemplar of the model teacher principals and parents dream about, who is willing to make sacrifices on behalf of her students. She was the first to volunteer for home visits, to help kids after school, and to stay and help with evening events. She was always eager to innovate in the classroom, which kept her young students in awe of her every move. As the school principal, I admired and appreciated the energy she brought to the profession. She was made for a career in teaching. Yet, Charlene would have quit that year if it wasn't for a great mentor. She told me this. Charlene was recruited from out of state, was desperately homesick, and needed a partner and a confidant. I could provide the evaluative feedback, but her mentor could give her a safe shoulder to cry on without judgment. Her mentor and colleague could work alongside her to refine her teaching, plan instruction, help manage discipline, and support her in a way an administrator cannot. Her mentor understood the life cycle of new teachers and helped her anticipate the challenges, professional and emotional, associated with becoming a great teacher. Teachers can receive different feedback from a colleague than a supervisor. And when they are in the formative stages of their careers, that is something that ends up shaping them as professionals for years to come. Teacher shortages and turnovers are costly both financially and in terms of student achievement. As an ESD administrator now, I'm interested in regional solutions for the 10 districts that I serve in Clackamas County. While our state currently has programs to help retain teachers, they are competitive and not large enough for a robust model. Yet, teacher retention is a challenge every Oregon school district faces. I look forward to the research-based strategies that the proposed study could produce, but I also hope we can take immediate action given the urgent need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, next.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Stacey Michelson, here on behalf of Multnomah Education Service District, as well as Corbett, Centennial, David Douglas, Gresham Barlow, Park Rose, and Ruddled School Districts. And I want to thank Representative Helfrich for bringing this forward after some discussions that we had with a number of our superintendents, as well as some of your colleagues this last December around some of the challenges that our folks are facing in terms of recruiting and retaining teachers, not only in general. We, I think, are familiar with the fact that there's a workforce challenge in the education field, but specifically as the demographics of our student bodies are changing, the faces of our staff has not kept pace with that. And we know that that has a big impact on how kids feel when they come to school. Having someone in the building who can understand their cultural background and, relate on a different level than teachers who are not familiar with their experiences. So I just want to share kind of a brief snapshot of what that disparity looks like in some of our districts. For example, Centennial is 43% Caucasian. This is the student body. 28% Hispanic, 12% Asian, and 7% Black. David Douglas is 38% white, 25% Hispanic, 15% Asian, and 12% Black. And Park Rose is 33% white, 27% Hispanic, 13% Asian, and 15% Black. And actually in Reynolds, where we have a majority, not quite a majority, but our largest proportion of students is Hispanic or Latino, they actually have a 93% of their staff is Caucasian. So we really do see a disparity there between what our teachers look like and their backgrounds compared to the students that we're serving. Some of that is history of who's been in the field, and retirement may change some of that, but we really want to be thoughtful about how we can best recruit and retain folks who reflect the communities that our students are from and their experiences. And having ODE do some of that work for us is kind of an ideal example of that state and local partnership, and is information that would be useful at a statewide level. So I'll let other folks talk about some of the specifics around teacher retention and the challenges there. I know Dr. Roselli has a lot of experience there, but I just wanted to share kind of at the community level what this could potentially look like for us in a very real way.
So. Always been a challenge. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Roselli?
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and Vice Chair Hernandez and members of the House Committee on Education. For the record, my name is Dr. Hilda Rosselli, and I serve as a policy director on matters related to educator advancement and college and career readiness in the Chief Education Office. I bring experience as a former middle school student who still stays in touch with students I taught 30 years ago. I also was a university professor, a researcher, and a dean of education in two different states. The bill, as proposed under House Bill 4404, aligns already with work that we are undertaking within the Chief Education Office, as was referenced by Representative Helfridge. The opportunity to dig deeper and to identify the evidence-based practices that we need to know about in districts that are making a difference is what is unique about this. Many of you know, and I think you may have received copies of some of this information, that the Chief Education Office is required by statute to produce an annual report on the progress of our state to diversify the educator workforce. The report is getting thicker and thicker because we not only include data, but we spotlight practices that we're hearing about that we think make a difference, both in the early start of partnerships between universities and districts, the hiring process, even the interview questions, as well as the mentoring and induction and the professional learning and career advancement that we know is important for our teachers. We also track 31 of the state's most diverse districts and report the disparity between the diversity of students and educators. However, this report is quite different in that, I mean, this study is quite different in that it expands the opportunity to really look deeply at what is working effectively. The second area that Representative McClain referenced is the fact that the Governor's Council on Educator Advancement has called out the recommendations that we need to address and are working on relative to supports for educators at every stage of their continuum in their profession. That includes what I referenced before around partnerships, but it also references the increased access to mentoring and induction for our both our teachers and our administrators who are new to the profession. What we don't really look at enough are the opportunities for those individuals who work in high-need schools or schools that serve many of the populations that this bill calls out. The third element that was referenced was the current TEL survey, which I am pleased to say that as of 5 minutes ago, 4,300 educators have completed the TEL survey, which only opened last Thursday. And that gives us the information from licensed educators, both teachers and administrators at every school, around their perceptions related to professional learning, access to opportunities for teacher leadership, their support that they get within the school, the new mentoring supports that are available to them. And we know that that data will become available to inform this study and legislators as early as April. We're very excited about that. Lastly, the ESSA plan that we submitted and was approved by the federal government called out a section called Equitable Access to Excellent Educators, and they ask every state to take a look at the disparities that sometimes exist between schools that may be in low-income areas or are serving the needs of very complex students. And I can tell you, as a former dean, it was discouraging to me to know that many times I was producing a good beginning teacher, and yet that's often where that new teacher was hired and placed. And I give you the analogy of the medical field, that if it's a complex surgery, you might not want to put a very brand new resident in that situation. And so I think we sometimes do that to our teachers as well without really looking at the equitable supports that they're going to need to be successful in those environments. We have looked carefully at the data that we would be using for this study. We know that that the areas that are called out, we would probably recommend that we use high poverty schools rather than free and reduced lunch status. We are concerned that we may not be able to tease out the elements around services that are, or schools and practices that are impacting students in foster care. And we would highly recommend that we include not only students with disabilities, but students who receive TAG services, and then those students that are still called twice exceptional. That means that they are qualified for TAG services and special education. As I would just like to say that the kinds of questions that we would imagine we'd be able to bring you answers back on would include things like the strategies or processes that districts are using to place new teachers in schools that actually result in retention and effectiveness for the educator. We're also interested in what are the supports that are most effective for new teachers in high poverty schools or schools where they have a lot of complex issues they're going to need to deal with. And we want to look at the practices that lead to retention. We know now that through the longitudinal data system, we're going to be able to track teachers as well as students. And I'm excited about the inclusion of that because it will allow us to look at what are we doing differently that may result in sometimes losing good educators to the profession. We want to look and see whether or not we're hiring and retaining the racially and linguistically diverse candidates that are graduating from our ed prep programs, and what we think the effective recruitment strategies are that are sustained, and what does it take to sustain those strategies? Is it a blip, or is it something that can be sustained? We know that the research is very clear on the impact of teacher turnover on student achievement, but what is also coming forward is the research that talks about the chaos that occurs in the culture of a school when you have a lot of turnover. The conversations in teacher lounges change when you see a revolving door happen, and there's also a loss of professional learning time and instructional time for those teachers as they help new people come into the school environment. There's also been documented just general burnout and a lack of trust of the staff that things are going well if they constantly see turnover. We also know there's a fiscal impact for our schools every time you lose a teacher and you need to go back in, recruit, prepare, induct, and support that new educator. In closing, I would just like to say that pending the Chief Education Office receipt of year two funding for the rest of the 17-19 biennium, we anticipate that we will be able to absorb the cost of the study outlined in this bill, and we would commence the post 2018 session to begin to work on this study and bring you back results prior to June 30th, 2019. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the panel? Representative Solman.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. I really don't have a question. I'm sorry. I just was feeling like at the moment at the end that you were just going to drop the mic and say because that was pretty incredible. I appreciate this opportunity to have this conversation. I appreciate the representative bringing this forward. And I just think that I have my daughter-in-law is a new teacher, third-year elementary teacher, and the difference that a mentor has done for her time in her classroom is incredible. And it not only gives her that insight as to just looking at similar lesson plans, but how she could tweak it to further engage her students is incredible. And I work for a company that has high retention, my other job, high retention. And with that, I think, comes that experience, comes the tribal knowledge, comes mentorship opportunities, and also just becomes an important part of folks' health and well-being, and makes it a healthier work environment. So I just appreciate you doing this, and I look forward to following along, and I'm hoping that this information will feed into and work with the Joint Committee on Student Success to really be able to sharpen their knowledge as well in that area. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions for the panel? Okay. One thing, a clarification, with this bill, there is going to be an amendment, and part of that amendment is to add special ed and TAG. And mm-hmm. so we'll be working this when the amendments come through, but I'm glad you mentioned that. So.
And that would include twice exceptional, because they fit into two categories.
Yes.
And they're coded differently.
Yes, they are. And it's got to be interesting. I ordered a book the other day that's going to be out at the end of the month by Dora Santoro, and it's called Demoralized, Why Teachers Leave the Profession They Love and How They Can Stay. And so it's coming out at the end of the month, and so hopefully we might be able to get some other good ideas on that. So, okay, anything else? Okay, thank you very much. That's all we had signed up. Anybody else want to speak on House Bill 4044? Okay, seeing none, we close the public hearing on House Bill 4044 and open up public hearing on House Bill 4013. Okay, if you want to go through and read what the summary is, and then we'll talk a little bit about the procedure that we're going to be doing, because we've got enough time for all of the testimony.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 4013 removes the designee from attending the State Board of Education meetings on behalf of the Secretary of State and State Treasurer. It allows the deputy for the State Treasurer and Secretary of State to attend the meetings on behalf of those two positions, and deputy for both of those positions are defined in statute. Revenue impact statement has been issued as no revenue impact. Fiscal impact has been issued as minimal, and there are no subsequent referrals for this bill.
Okay, so the first panel actually will be myself and then Jan McComb giving some background, but I'm going to be speaking from the dais as to the background as to the purpose of what this bill was and is. Representative, he's now a senator, Frederick, talked about it, is Senate Bill 428 was passed during the 2009 session. And the idea with that was that they would add the Secretary of State and the Treasurer to the State Board of Education, because at that time there was a lot of talk about we need civics education and financial literacy education. I'm going to say back in the schools, because I used to teach the financial literacy part. And so what they would be is as non-voting ex officio members of the State Board of Education, and hopefully there would be an increased engagement in the with the executive branch by having these two statewide elected officials. The intent at the time was that it would be the Secretary of State and the Treasurer themselves, or a close internal designee accountable to the executive officer, like a chief of staff or a legislative director, who would participate. I think it's very important to clarify the law so that it matches what the intent of the law was, and that was the intent of the bill, was simply to go through and follow the legislative intent back in 2009. That was the intent in 2009, and that's the intent of House Bill 4013. Every state board is important, and the people who are selected to serve on the board are put there for a reason, because of the expertise in the subject area, which in this particular case was a matter of civic engagement and personal finance. And so that's why the Treasurer and the Secretary of State were put on. I'm going to refer to, in a little bit, to Senator Dembrough's testimony. He had a meeting, so he couldn't be here this afternoon. But it's important for the individuals attending these meetings to be involved with giving the input into some of the curriculum that they wanted to do. And because this would really have a bearing on, when we talk about civics and financial literacy, a bearing on what the curriculums could look like down the road. The designees have access to a wide range of information. They also ultimately serve as the voice and direct representative of the individuals that are sent to represent. For those reasons, it's important that in the event that a designee other than the Secretary or Treasurer attend, that they work closely hand in hand with that elected official. This legislation is about providing a straightforward technical fix to ensure there is continuity in the person attending these meetings. Ultimately, it's about serving our state's children's state. The Treasurer could not be here this afternoon, but he's got in OLIS, Mr. Palmateer sent a testimony, and so did Representative Dembrough, who was involved in the initial Senate bill that we talked about earlier, Senate Bill 428. And I think it's important to go through and look at some of the things that were discussed back at that time, because he was also on the State Board of Education. And some of the reasons that Senator Metzger, who was the original person with this bill, made it very, very clear that designating a member of the Secretary of State's staff and also the treasurer's staff. And so I think Senator Denbrough went through and actually, you know, cleared his mind as to some of the things that they had, because he goes through and refers to, for example, a hearing on May 6, 2008 and so on the bill. So I would suggest that you read that. But that was the purpose of the bill, was to go through and follow what the intent of the legislation was, and to make sure that we have the proper input when they do discuss civics education and financial literacy, which, by the way, are very important in the curriculum. Okay. Okay, Jan McComb.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
For the record, my name is Jan McComb, private citizen, back from the dead, and I reside in Salem.
She's back again. She's back.
In the legislative districts of Senator Winters and Representative Evans. I was staff to the board when this law took effect, and so I paid particular attention to the testimony that was given then and how I was going to then implement it. And when I saw this bill in the electronic bill stack, I thought I had an obligation to come and explain the intent of the law and how it was implemented during its first 6 years and how it's being implemented now. Because legislators are sensitive to when state agencies don't implement legislation as they intend, this bill gives you an opportunity to revisit the policy and either affirm the original intent or move to support a broader interpretation. So during the bill's public hearings in 2009, the Treasurer and the Secretary of State testified that the purpose of the law was to give the two offices opportunities to weigh in with the State Board of Education regarding modification of civics and financial literacy academic standards, and also the development of essential skills in those two areas. Office holders or designees would only attend meetings when those subjects were being considered. Proponents of the bill stated that the position would not be used for political purposes. As implemented for the first 6 years, the state treasurer and the secretary of state were added to the board's webpage. Designees weren't recognized on the board's webpage, and they weren't given nameplates. They just brought them from their respective offices. They weren't paid for their expenses. The office was sent board materials, and the office would determine who, if anyone, would attend the meetings. The person actually attending, you know, would vary. And designees were just that. They were employees that represented the office. And this interpretation was maintained through 2016, but in 2017, it was reinterpreted by one of the offices, which I would argue is certainly within the statutory framework to allow that. And they sent a non-state employee. But that raised issues that had never, you know, come across before. And so the staff was dealing with things for the first time and trying to work through those issues. So in looking at this bill, was thinking, okay, what would be the advantage of having a state employee as the designee rather than a non-state employee? So I came up with a few, and if you would humor me, I'll work down the list. First, without financial disclosure, as required for the other board members, the treasurer, and the secretary of state, non-employees could use the position to make money, and we would not know about it, an ethics violation. State employees are trained in state ethics law, while private citizens may only have a tenuous grasp of what is allowed. And then there's some role confusion. As generally understood, a designee represents the office or person that appointed them. State employees understand this role and strive to ensure that anything they say reflects the views of the actual board member, in this case, the state treasurer and the secretary of state. I know there were a couple times when I was a designee for the deputy superintendent of public instruction, and I was mainly there to answer questions and to report back what happened. I certainly never voiced my own opinions. When the designee is not an employee of the office they're representing, they might have their own independent public persona.
Okay.
In a situation where they use the title State Board of Education member in social media or newspaper comments, it's unclear who is speaking in the social media posts. Is it the governor, the office holder, the state board, or an independent citizen who is not a public official? Posts might include political statements, and again, it further raises the confusion about who is actually speaking. When governor-appointed board members speak in their community or at state functions, they are asked to either not identify themselves as board members or to add that while they are board members, they're not speaking on behalf of the board, you know, unless the board has voted to give them that responsibility. Again, it's just sort of a clarification about who you're speaking for. State workers are regularly drilled about public records law and understand that emails are regularly requested and released, and they don't take offense when those requests are made. Similarly, the state archivist has opined that private Facebook pages created by public officials that discuss public business is a public document, and records generally have a 3-year retention period. A non-state employee may not understand this and may delete postings or block some Oregon citizens from the site. Also, an independently created Facebook page makes it more difficult for the state offices to oversee and manage the page, which is the usual case for public records. You know, for example, the state board, the Department of Ed has those emails run through the agency for public records retention purposes to make sure that they don't get lost somewhere. And then there's some legal issues to consider. At times, the board must make decisions that some parties oppose. Board members, like a jury, listen to the various arguments and eventually make a decision. They make decisions as a body and do not independently act to develop new facts and legal theories. A private citizen, understandably, does not necessarily understand this role and may involve themselves with one side or another in a dispute. A state employee better understands their neutral role. Similarly, a state employee understands that state agencies must rely on DOJ in legal matters, whether they agree with the advice or not. Every consultation with DOJ costs the agency money. Public employees are more likely to be aware of how boards operate, and if not, would be more likely to take advantage of nearby training opportunities. They would be more likely to interpret protocols as strategies to enhance the effectiveness of a board rather than that of silencing a member. Then there's the matter of what the state board does and doesn't do.
And Ms. McComb, I'm going to have to ask you how much to kind of wrap it up, because we've got about 10 people to go, and we've got an hour before we need to get out of here. So thank you.
The average Oregonian thinks of the department as the state education cop, when really most issues are handled by local boards. And a lack of understanding about this can lead a person to arrive at an erroneous conclusion. I think private citizens could become frustrated when the department of the board doesn't intervene more in local matters and conclude that state players just don't care when that's not the case. And as you know, ODE works with legislators and school districts to correct deficiencies based on legislative funding and priorities. So in conclusion, although appointed by an elected official, the governor, the state board has always been apolitical. The state board is not looking for yes people. These ethical and responsible citizens volunteer their personal time to make Oregon better. They do not rubber stamp recommendations made by the deputy superintendent. One only has to look at how they handled the issue of Native American mascots over many years, seeking public input at every turn, to understand that they are not afraid of criticism or controversy or public input. Everything the board does is transparent. There's lots of opportunities for public input. If this bill passes, trust me, this is not going to silence any critics. They're probably going to be more inspired. This is really an education governance bill. And what makes sense, you know, and whether you want the original intent of the bill or whether you want to revisit it and change it and make it broader. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Ms. McComb? Representative Parrish?
I can defer to Sherry. I saw your hand up first.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
not so much a question, Jan, as a comment. Of our 197 school districts, there isn't a single paid board member on a single one. So we do have people that are not state employees in those roles. And I just want to point that out. Whether they do a good or a bad job isn't my point. But we have lots of people that are not state employees sitting on boards making governance decisions.
Okay.
Representative Parrish.
Okay, well, I appreciate your testimony. I have a couple questions about the other members of the board, because in looking through this, and certainly Representative Frederick, or is that Representative, sorry, that's Senator. From the time when he was serving on this committee with us, Senator Frederick, you know, certainly as an educator, qualifications. But when I look at other makeups of the board, trial lawyers, people who work for corporations, if the purpose is education and we're, you know, hearing that maybe a designee doesn't have those qualifications, the only statutory qualifications for the governor's appointees are geography, essentially. So I sort of have a little bit of struggle with the commentary that, you know, we need a level of expertise when maybe the person who's a trial lawyer isn't bringing that expertise, or maybe the person who works for PGE isn't bringing that level of expertise to the existing board. But the more technical question, so that's comment, but technical question is, what does the statute say, or what does the governance of any of our boards say about, say, using titles on resumes? I mean, one of the things I heard was sort of a potential ethics complaint about whether somebody is not getting the right training and then therefore using that to make money. But I would argue, if I get to use this title on a resume and it's a boost up for my next job, isn't that essentially the same type of thing? I guess I'm just a little concerned about what kind of training and what are the uses for the other board members of the title as it relates to that.
Chair Doherty, Representative Parrish, great question. When I was staffing the board, we had the DOJ come in and do ethics training once a year. I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice. And you're absolutely right. There are no hard and fast rules. And in fact, a lot of this it's really kind of amorphous. You have local boards that are elected, and I think they have norms that are different than legislators. You know, you are who you are privately and publicly. A state worker, we set aside our private beliefs when we are at work and we do the job. You know, did I think this was the most brilliant legislation I ever saw when it came out? No, but I implemented it. In fact, I worked harder at implementing it than the two offices that came and brought it to us. And so you would have to probably ask the Ethics Commission about whether you're allowed to use your title and in what way. And I'm not saying anybody's done that. I'm just saying, when you start to merge the public and the private, it gets kind of murky. And I don't think we've really clarified that yet. And I would look to you all to perhaps work at clarifying those roles.
That's the follow-up.
Okay.
Follow-up. So on the training, you said there's annual training. So are people who are designees excluded from that training? They're not invited to attend with the other board members? Because I would have a feeling if that's available to them, they'd attend if need be.
So Rep. Doherty, Rep. Parrish, I believe, I didn't say annual, but I believe the governor's office does trainings for their appointed board members. And this is kind of where this doesn't quite fit into the usual governance structure, because, and they're not supported as well, because they don't have that opportunity.
So the treasurer's office and the secretary of state's office does not engage in ethics training for any of their staff at any time?
I'm sorry, Chair Doherty, Rep. Parrish. I have no idea what they do. But I know that other state agencies have regular ethics training for their staff.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Evans, then Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. And Jan, first of all, thank you as a private citizen for coming in. Some people in this building get paid very well to be here. Some people don't get paid very much. Some people are here for lots of reasons. And actually, in this particular case, I appreciate coming here out of a sense of duty for a mission that you've already fulfilled. So thank you for coming in. My questions are really pretty basic, but I want to make sure I understand. But there's three. First question is, the original intent of this was not to add two more members to the board per se for everything, but rather for the civics and the financial literacy piece. Is that correct?
Chair Doherty, Rep. Evans, that is correct.
Okay. Second question is, and again, I come from a world where there are subject matter experts that are brought into a conversation, but they are not a member of the group that has been appointed and confirmed by the Senate. Is the Oregon Board of Education still confirmed by the Senate?
Chair Doherty, Rep. Evans, they are.
Okay. Third question or comment really is, I understand that we're at a crossroads of whether we expand the concept of what we have or whether we go to what we used to have. I happen to believe that we should actually tear apart this nonsense that we have built over the last 10 years and go back to a separately elected superintendent of education and have a board very similar to we had in the past. That said, I know that a lot of people work very hard to make what we have work. My concern in all this is that it does not become something it does not need to be. So sometimes I think the original intent still matters. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hi, Jan.
Hi.
One of the charming things about the legislative process is that a guy like me can be on the Education Committee. Guy who marginally got out of high school and joined the Navy and then got married and life happened and I really didn't get an opportunity to finish my education. But as I say, one of the charming things about this process is I can be on a committee like this and simply offer my expertise as a lifelong business person, radio broadcaster, business owner, and legislator, you know, now. But, you know, I quit in 03 and took 13 years off before I came back. And during that 13 years, I had the privilege of being named to the Oregon Commission on the Public Commission on the Legislature in 06, which was a cool thing to be assigned to because we made a number of recommendations over a year period on what we thought would make the legislative process work better. So I guess what I'm working up to is one of the things I like about the way the bill has been interpreted recently, as a non-insider who's got experience in civics and who has certainly an experience of running a business for 40 years, a business that just celebrated its 60th anniversary. I could be on this board the way the interpretation is now, but with the change that is being suggested, I wouldn't be eligible, would I?
Chair Doherty, Rep. Wilson, you would be eligible to be a full-fledged voting member of the board. If you went through the governor's process, I believe Rep. Parrish was correct. There's really no statutory requirements to be a board member.
There's one.
Yes, the geography, with two at-large members.
Sorry to interrupt. There's also that you can't be a public employee.
Yes.
On the board.
You cannot currently be involved in the school governance. You are employed by a school.
So I guess I would just follow up in saying that the positions I'm thinking of are the ones we're talking about today, and if these changes were made, I wouldn't be able to be eligible to do this kind of thing, you know, and I'd find it a very interesting prospect to be able to do. So anyway, that's all I had to say.
Are you applying for the state board?
I might.
Apparently for the say, Chair Doherty, Rep. Wilson, I think the governor would be very interested in having your application.
Be careful what you just volunteered for, man.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Okay, Jan, thank you very much. Okay, we have one, two, three panels of people. The first panel is Mike Rosen, Steve Elzina, and Teresa, is it Rayfield? I couldn't read it. Okay. Thank you very much. And Ms., make sure you identify yourself for the record. And again, you're testifying on the bill that deals with the statutory intent. So that's what we're looking for, is that you either speak against the statutory intent or not. So, okay, who's going to go first?
Mike is on the record.
ask first, so we'll go in the order.
I can go first. Chair Doherty and committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm Michael Rosen, and I'm currently a Portland Public School board director, and I appreciate you allowing me to testify early so I can get back to Portland for a meeting. So I'm here to testify against HB House Bill 4013. I'm in the third year of a four-year term on the Portland Public School Board, and I'm a 20-year parent public school advocate at the state and local level. And I've seen a lot of public education advocates come and go, and I would say Kim Sordell is the best of the best, and I've worked with her for 5 years. She's thorough, direct.
Could you identify who that is? I don't know who that is.
Kim Sordell is the
person. Oh, okay.
Okay. She's the person that would not be allowed to be on the board.
She's a designee of the Secretary of State.
Right. Okay. Exactly. So I've seen a lot of public education advocates come and go, and Kim Sordell is the best of the best. I've worked with her for 5 years. She's thorough, direct, well-informed, often better informed than the electeds and administrators, and she is relentless, passionate, and assertive. Is she feared? Yes, because she is what the system needs, an agent of change. I can say with certainty Kim has upped my game, and I can see her upping the Department of Ed's game. So I suggest that you do not move this bill, but instead ask the Department of Education to up its game. Under Kim's assertive urging, that's what the Portland School Board has done. Thank you.
And so the legislative intent, are you going to testify towards that, or?
Well, the legislative intent is to remove that position.
Well, no, the legislative intent that we talked about earlier from Senator Denbrough's information.
I'm not following what the question is.
Okay, the question is what we're talking about is when this bill was put in, the legislative intent is that the designee would be somebody from the office of either the Treasurer or the Secretary of State. So
and
that's
the bill
what we're
seeks
looking
to clarify
towards.
That.
Pardon?
The bill seeks to clarify that.
So that's
yes,
all we're
it just changed
right.
Designated deputy.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah. Which is why I oppose it.
Okay. Next.
Chair Doherty, members of the Education Committee. My name is Steve Elzinga. I'm the Government and Legal Affairs Director for the Secretary of State. Thanks so much for allowing us to testify today. House Bill 4013 is an anti-accountability measure targeting Democrat Kim Sordell for removal from the State Board of Education in apparent retaliation for her advocacy for transparency, accountability, and equity. Kim is an attorney whose two sons attend Portland Public Schools. Secretary Richardson appointed her to the board to be a strong advocate for students, parents, and teachers. The Ben Bulletin editorial board opposed House Bill 4013 in an editorial entitled, "Don't Change Rules to Ban State School Board Member." They said, quote, "Legislators shouldn't manipulate the rules to silence voices they don't like." But that appears to be what's at work with a bill proposed, with a proposed bill to change who can sit on the State Board of Education. Lawmakers should reject this maneuver to silence a critic, end quote. The Oregonian editorial board wrote, quote, "You've got to be kidding," end quote, in an editorial opposing House Bill 4013 entitled, "Yes, Men and Women Only for the State Board of Education." They went on to explain, and I'm going to read an extensive quotation here. "Sordell, to put it lightly, gets under people's skin. She can be acerbic, cutting, and relentless in her accusations of mismanagement, incompetence, or cronyism. Unfortunately for her critics, she is also often right, as she has shown in her scrutiny of Portland schools, highlighting instances in which the district violated state law, ignored its own policies, and put the careers of administrators or teachers above the interests of students. She has often questioned the way things have been done, particularly when they don't work. These are qualities that, to most of us, would seem to be reasons to keep her on the Board of Education, no matter people's hurt feelings. And there's simply no reason to change the law." And again, I'm still quoting from the Oregonian editorial board. According to the Tribune story, Doherty said,
"Stand back from the mic. You're fuzzing out on our records."
Okay, so I apologize. Yeah. How's this?
That's good.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going.
Okay. So again, I'm still quoting from the Oregonian editorial board. According to the Tribune story, Doherty said, "Board members have to deal with sensitive information." That's hardly a rationale, particularly considering that by law the governor appoints members of the community, not her own staff, to also serve on the board. The idea here is that the board and the department benefit from having regular members of the public who are passionate about education provide their input and opinions, even if they don't rubber stamp what state education staff might put forward. And considering the condition of Oregon's education system,
you need to sit back a little more.
The lack of progress in graduation rates, continuing achievement gaps, board members and department staff might want to focus on growing thicker skin and recognizing that criticism can be a good thing, because certainly the status quo has not been. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of the quote. Oregon's education is currently failing 1 in 4 students and is ranked among the worst 5 states in low graduation rates for 5 years in a row. The Secretary of State's recent audits at the Department of Education identify significant improvements needed to help students succeed, but anti-accountability House Bill 4013 moves in the wrong direction.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. This is the first time I've heard this, and no one has ever contacted myself or my office about this bill and what the intent of it was. And I just want to make that clear, that this is the first time I've heard this. And the one quote that they had was from, I believe, that woman that came up when we first introduced the bill. And that's the only thing that I said to her, because I didn't know who she was. So I think it just needs to be made important that when you say things about what the intent of something is, it's really a good idea to talk to the person that brought the bill forward. So that's just for the record.
Sure. Okay. With all due respect, if I could respond to that, yeah. Madam Chair.
That was a statement, not a question. So Teresa?
It's Teresa. Ma'am. And Rep Chair and the board. Just looking at the board, I can tell honestly that no matter what I say, and I can tell you this from experience because I've been coming to the state capitol, coming to committee meetings, education committee meetings, speaking to legislators, reps, senators, even going to the White House on behalf of my community, and I'm still invisible when it comes to these type of decisions that are made in our community until we got Dennis Richardson elected. Go figure. After so many years of listening to elected leaders in my community talk about how racist the Republicans were, we finally got somebody that thought that a voice from our community would help us.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, would help us get some type of...
These microphones are real sensitive, and so you're...
If you do it about 6 inches.
Okay, so can you still hear me?
Okay. All of you, just sit.
So it's just weird.
So
it's just weird that when we finally get somebody from our community that is absolutely already advocating, and let's say when we talk about the bill and the way that it was intended, and we talk about the need for civics and financial understanding... When we talk about civics in my community, where we have cultural competency that takes precedent over safety, and not, you know, just regular safety for our children in our schools against all forms of violence and oppression, mm-hmm. We never brought in civics. We've never had any leader to think that civics mattered when it comes to filing investigations or complaints or articulating a complaint or helping someone fight legal action to help support the claims of any kind of vicious things that are happening to our children in our school system. I grew up in Portland Public Schools. I'm 48 years old in September. I'll be 48 years old. I advocate on behalf of tons of families who have lost their children to not only gun violence, gang violence, sexual violence, continued sexual violence that has been perpetrated and basically approved by members of this committee against children in my community, and we don't have anyone standing for us. So when Rep. Dennis became the new Secretary of State, I was happy that he appointed somebody that was already in the fight with us for accountability in regards to our children's safety. And as a matter of civics, bringing people into an opportunity to file these grievances and these investigations, even though none of the culturally competent education partners or contractors or any of these organizations that sit on these boards would stand up and advocate for us at all. And when we talk about mentors and tutors and inclusion on these boards, when those people mandate that victimization and criminalization and shaming of people that speak out is warranted to create a bill to offset that opportunity to be accountable is shameful. And especially in reflection to our bad standards of education in this state, I think that maybe this board not only needs to be investigated and audited for their intended purposes, but also that original 2000 2008 bill that put Rep. Senator, whatever he is, Luke Frederick, who does not represent my community, in a position to be appointed as a gatekeeper to keep this system from being accountable to people like myself that would seek grievance through these type of political processes. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you need to say your name again for
yes,
the record.
Yes, Teresa Rayford.
Teresa, thank you much. Okay, any questions? Okay, thank you very much. The next panel
Charles McGee is rapist, and you're bad for keeping him on your boards. I wish you guys would do something about all of the bad people that you have on your boards, just again for the record.
Okay, next we have Mr. James, and I can't read your first name. Mr. James, Jack McCullough, and Carolyn Finn.
So they'll protect rapists over children.
Yeah, and usually the protocol in our meetings is to try to keep comments from, and not keep them down. We don't have comments from the audience while somebody else is speaking. It's just common courtesy. Okay, thank you very much. And make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Hey, my name is Jack McCullough, and I am the son of Kim Sordell. And
for you, we're going to have the microphone just a little bit lower. You're like me. I'm a little short. Thank you very much. Thanks, Jack.
And I am here to testify why I think that this is a really an obvious decision. But you passing this bill would do only one thing, and that would be take my mom off of the board. And from what I've heard, she's one of the only people here that is actually supporting the students and working really hard. And ever since she came, this came up, and you've been, according to her, you've been like, well, not you specifically, but people have been saying, people in the business have been punishing her for talking during the meetings. And you're just, not you, but people have just really been not nice to her ever since she joined the board. And now coincidentally, this bill comes up, which would do nothing but remove her. I think that you're just getting rid of her because she's being competent and she's ruining the horrible, incompetent place that is here. And I'm not saying any of you are horrible or incompetent. I'm just saying
we understand that.
I'm just saying that there are some incompetent people, and that this would, and she's a very competent person who's just been working to help students and that stuff. But anyway, also, thank you.
Okay, very good. You're very articulate, Jack. Okay, next.
I'm Caroline Fenn. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in opposition to House Bill 4013. I'm speaking as an education advocate and activist. I was a Portland Public Schools parent for many years. The purpose of House Bill 4013 is to remove Secretary of State Dennis Richardson's non-voting appointee to the State Board of Education, Citizen Kim Sordell. The bill requires the State Treasurer and Secretary of State to appoint their deputies and declares a state of emergency so that the bill would take effect immediately. There is no emergency. There is only a desire to silence Kim Sordell. It's a bad idea to enact legislation directed at an individual. It's a bad idea for legislatures to be in the position of silencing citizens. This kind of activity is called a witch hunt, and we have seen it before in some of the darkest days of our nation's history. The silencing of citizens by those in power undermines democracy itself. If passed, this bill could well have a chilling effect on citizens' willingness to serve in a public capacity and speak truth to power. Kim Sordell is outspoken, laser-focused on students and the law, and not always nice. She does not prioritize tact, and she is willing to make people uncomfortable in her pursuit of justice. I can understand that those she has challenged would delight in finding a way to silence her, but the legislature would be wrong to help them. Many children and families in Portland and elsewhere have relied on Kim's help in getting their districts and the state to follow the law. She has exposed unsavory and illegal school and district practices that need to be stopped. She is a public whistleblower, and we need more people like her in public service, not fewer.
Okay.
Kim has continued to keep the focus on students in her role as a non-voting member of the State Board of Education. That is not cause to declare a state of emergency, nor does it justify passing a law to get her removed. The State Board of Education is full of private citizens, most of whom are appointed by the governor. There is literally no rationale for legislating a different set of rules for the state treasurer and secretary of state. Our system of government should be robust enough that it can withstand sharp words and frank debate. I hope you will not let HB 4013 out of committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, this is not the purpose of the bill, but I appreciate you coming down and testifying. Okay, the other person that we had was Albea Jama.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. We had it down, Mr. James. I couldn't read your handwriting. I'm sorry. If you'd like to come up and testify.
Sure.
Jack, you did a great job.
Thank you.
And we're going to start looking at time because there's some things we have to do. We want to make sure that we give everybody opportunity but not go over.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and other members of the committee.
And you need the microphone over and identify who you are. These are very sensitive mics. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Chair, and other members of the committee for this opportunity to testify against HB 413. My name is Abdi Chamak. I serve as a parent liaison, community agent, resource specialist, equity coordinator, school family partnerships, and now family engagement coordinator. My role is to engage parents and students for a successful student outcome. Also, I serve an advisory group member. I'm an advisory group member for ODE's African American Black Student Success Plan. Over the years, I have supported and advocated for PBS and served students and their families, especially African refugee and immigrant students in the Portland public schools. As you're probably aware of, our school system has a significant number of underserved African immigrant and refugee students. Having spent years in the refugee camps, a significant number of these students come with little or no formal education prior to entering our school system. Therefore, they face enormous educational and psychosocial challenges. But today I'm here that I want to share with you, I would like to share with you how Kim Sordell recently her advocacy and support made a huge difference in the immigrant and refugee family at Harrison Park School. At the beginning of the school year, families and the kids, including little kids, show up to the bus stop, but no buses came. After approaching the principal, to question the situation, parents were told that families within 1 mile radius of the school were not eligible for transportation provided by the school. This came as a shock to families because the service has been provided for the past 3 years. The parents in this situation are immigrants and refugees who aren't well informed about the workings of the school system. These families live in a couple in a complex apartment that's like 0.9 miles from Harrison Park School, just under the 1 mile required for buses. This rule is not representative of the needs of the student family who live Southeast 92nd between Powell and Division. I want to share with you an email regarding the safety issue on South.
Okay, can I give you about we're done about 3 minutes?
Okay, sure.
Thank you,
sir.
Yeah.
So this email was sent to the Department Transportation Department in PPS. This is what the principal said, that the safety issue regarding the Division Street has have exacerbated with two pedestrian deaths on one day and another last week. And one of them was killed at the 87th Avenue and Division intersection. So after 5 months working in unsafe condition, the district was still at standstill, and Kim got involved after parents met with the school transportation and equity department. Officially, at all levels, parents resorted to testifying before the board, which proved successful. District resumed transportation service for families. Thanks to Kim Sordell's relentless advocacy and support, parents were really parents really appreciate Kim's advocacy and assistance. Kim Sordell, Secretary of State designee to the State Board of Education, is tirelessly committed to our students and our family, and we need more people like her to improve student outcome for our state. Any attempt to silence is counterproductive. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify in opposition to this bill, House Bill 40130.
Okay. Thank you very much. Again, we speak more specifically to the bill. We'd appreciate it. But thank you very much for your testimony. Okay. And the last three that we have is Linda Nebeta, Dan Yelnick, and Marie Tywall. And thank you.
Hi.
And again, if we could speak to the bill specifically.
Yes. Actually, I wrote this up, and I did a two-minute testimony.
Thank you.
But after, you know, some of the testimony that I've heard, I am going to explain it and speak more to the intent of the bill of essentially bringing back, you know, state employees to represent.
And you need to identify yourself for the record.
Yes. For the record, my name is Linda Nesbeta. I'm a Beaverton parent of three kids. And I want to... I understand where this was created, you know, in 2008, but I do think times have changed. The state school board, they're appointed from the governor's office.
You
know, they're not employees. And they basically fall in the same realm of the Secretary of State as well as the treasurer. I want to explain a little bit of something that, how this kind of works in how this worked in like real life for us. So I currently have an appeal with the Oregon Department of Education. As a parent, I'm very, it's new working with different organizations,
with
right?
The State Board of Education?
Well, with the Oregon Department of Education, but I testified at the State Board of Education regarding some of the policies surrounding it. And it was my first time ever going to a State Board of Education meeting, forever. And actually, no designees attended this meeting. It was strictly the voting members. And as a parent, I was really disappointed in the voting members. First of all, half of the board almost couldn't even make it through the whole meeting. They
Can
were
I ask
talking.
You a clarifying question? It's just a legal thing. Is this something that is pending?
Oh, no, this is just regarding my testimony.
Oh, okay.
The board
it's not
meeting.
Something that's legally
no,
pending
no, I'm
to
not
the
going
state.
There.
Okay,
this
thank you.
This is the complexities of the system.
Thank you very much.
But it was, you know, half of the board couldn't stay. It was, there was conversation of how attending a school is, you know, makes them feel kind of creepy. And there was generally a loss of sense of what their purpose was as the voting members of the school board, which they specifically said several times. And it got me to thinking, you know, we need more voices, and we need more voices up on that state school board who can bring in perspective and who can, you know, represent different areas. So Secretary of State and the Treasury, because Tobias Reed used to be my representative, they're great people, and they don't just stick to, you know, the specifics of it. So we will talk about, you know, funding. We'll talk about how can we educate community on teaching how schools are funded. How can we, you know, come up with better ideas to provide extracurricular programs? How can we, Secretary of State, public records requests, ethics commission complaints. All of this stuff is all intertwined, and having all these different perspectives and actually understanding it is very valuable, I think, to have, you know, as a school leadership board. And they can't vote, so that's another thing. So going back to, you know, what's happening with our case, so it's complex and it's spread now over the Ethics Commission, Secretary of State, and Oregon Department of Education. And this is not about Kim Sordell. It is about the resources that these all these groups can help with. And even though Kim Sordell has been a great help, it's been a huge help in navigating on where to go, where jurisdiction lies, where, you know, how to operate and how to operate, you know, and who to go to. So I hope that we, that you guys can, you know, not, you know, have this bill go through the committee and maybe look at expanding how the board can work, you know, on a broader level all together, so to help all of our kids.
Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Okay, Mr. Yelnick.
Good afternoon, Madam
I know
Chairman.
You.
members of the committee.
Let me get the microphone just Yedinek. About this much closer to you. Perfect. Hi, Dan.
Okay. My name is Dan Yedinek. I'm a resident of the of city of Tigard, a constituent of Representative Doherty. And usually, we find ourselves pretty closely aligned on most positions. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I've only just recently read, you know, the specifics of the proposed changes to ORS 326.021, and I have not had a chance to meet and talk with Representative Doherty about that. But my initial impressions have left me with some pretty grave concerns, and just a whole swath of questions. So I'm here today to state my opposition to HB 4013. I have submitted written testimony that elaborates on my thoughts and concerns.
So if you could, just summarize, if we've got your written testimony,
exactly
then we can do that.
Plans.
Thank you.
And again, just to restate that I am, you know, stating my opposition to HB 4013 based on five tenets. First was the use of declaration of an emergency. The second was impact of immediate changes on participation by the offices of the Treasurer and the Secretary of State. Also, replacing designee with the deputy limits citizen participation in government. And I also question whether or not the proposed changes actually affect any meaningful positive change. The lack of time, I think, you know, is also a pressure on me. I know that you guys have been talking about this for a little longer, but I feel like, you know, kind of looping back to the declaration of emergency, I feel like this is something that, especially given all the other, you know, testimony that we've heard, I feel like this deserves a much richer, fuller conversation before we go through. And so I'm just going to really briefly sort of expand and just say that, you know, I've been thinking about, in particular, the language surrounding declaration of an emergency, and I'm just having a really hard time seeing how an individual representative attending a generally publicly accessible meeting in an ex officio non-voting capacity could be determined as an emergency necessary for the immediate preservation of public peace, health, and safety. And as I stated before, I feel like the potential immediate change would negatively impact the ability for both the Treasurer and the Secretary of State's offices to participate in the meetings, at least in the foreseeable future, given the deputies are already, you know, probably quite solidly booked. I also feel like several other people have said that, you know, the current, you know, language of a designee and its interpretation allows for active and involved citizens to engage in our government in a positive and meaningful way. And that by replacing the word designee with deputy, we're unintentionally sending a message to the general public that they should not be involved in their government. And I cannot emphasize enough, that's an unintentional implication there. So while my written testimony goes into more detail, I can tell you that personally I feel like this is rushed. It's not completely considered and vetted. I believe it sends an unintentional message to the general public. And given my past experiences with the legislature, I really find that surprising. And I think it's because it's rushed. So I do urge you to please just, you know, continue to discuss this. Absolutely. I feel like it's a topic worthy of discussion. But I don't feel like, you know, and I would ask you not to pass this out of committee, at least not in this current session. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Nice seeing you again.
Thank you.
Okay, Marie. And we push the microphone over to you. Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify.
And make sure you identify yourself for the recording.
Oh, yeah, that was my next sentence.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. let me switch it. My name is Marie Tyvall. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in opposition to House Bill 4013. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I'm speaking as a former administrator in Portland Public Schools, a PPS parent, and as an education advocate. As many people have testified today, the only purpose of this bill is to silence Kim Sordell, Secretary of State Dennis Richardson's non-voting appointee to the State Board of Education. As someone who has benefited personally from Kim's advocacy and support, I can attest that Kim has only one objective with everything she does: to ensure that Portland Public Schools follow the rule of the law. As a proud Oregonian, it's actually embarrassing to me that I even have to say these words, but I have to say them again. Kim would have nothing to do at all if PPS made a point of following the law at all times. She spent the last 5 years of her professional life as a volunteer to support PPS parents, students, teachers, and staff in an organization that has few systems in place to ensure accountability. And she's helped hundreds of people. I know that she would be absolutely delighted if she had to spend less time inspiring the largest school district in Oregon to do what is generally accepted as the right thing, i.e., follow the rule of the law when it comes to protecting the health and safety of our students. Can she be combative and outspoken? Sure. And frankly, that's the absolutely appropriate response to counter any public institution and its leaders who act as though they are above the rule of the law. Our society recognizes the inestimable value of a whistleblower, and that's exactly why they are protected legally. Kim Sordell is a powerful, unrelenting, and highly effective advocate, and we are all in her debt. I respectfully urge you to respect the intentions of our state treasurer and Secretary of State and decline to move this bill forward. It's unimaginable to me that we as Oregonians could take any other action. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Thanks. I have a question for you, since you live in Portland, and we heard earlier testimony that there was concern potentially that a designee that doesn't go through a Senate confirmation is somehow then a political appointment. But I just want, just as a general citizen, would like to get your opinion. If a member of the board appointed by the governor worked for a company who a month before that appointment, her company made political contributions to the governor, just as a general citizen, would you think that that is potentially a political appointment?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so I just want to sort of, I guess, and I'm asking just as a general citizen, because by nature, when you have five members of the board of, right, currently appointed by the governor that don't necessarily make up the current makeup of those districts politically, CD2, for example, that representative is not a Republican, and yet that's held by a Republican congressional member. I guess the question I have for you, the secretary is a Republican, Kim Sordell is a Democrat. What do you make of his appointment of her?
Well, if I can go, I don't want to interrupt your question, but is this relevant to the, you know, what
well,
we're
Madam
talking
Chair,
about?
Well, Madam Chair, you said today that this bill is about the intent, and I dispute the intent,
okay.
And you've tried to direct
okay,
testimony
then go ahead
to
and
people.
Answer the question.
So I just,
yeah.
We heard testimony from somebody
yeah.
who was trying to clarify the intent that this was about politics,
then,
and those appointments
yes.
are about politics. So I'm making it relevant
then
to the testimony
then,
we heard.
Then answer the question. Thank
Secretary
you.
Richardson's a Republican. Kim Sordell's a Democrat. What do you make of that appointment? If this is a political position.
My limited understanding is that Dennis Richardson appointed, and that might not be the right word, put her on the board, is because from a very practical standpoint, she is effective in protecting the health and safety of our students. That her political affiliation is completely irrelevant to her ability to be extremely effective.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Those are all that we have signed up for House Bill 4013. Anybody else? Okay. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4013. And the other bills, we're going to wait for an amendment on Representative Helfrich's bill, and then we are waiting for, we're going to work the other bill on Monday, Representative Alonzo Leones. So with that, I adjourn the House Education Committee. Thank you.